Welcome back. You're listening to Horizons on Radio Kerry. Sister Mary Lucy, tell me the story of Africa for you.
For a year, I got a year sabbatical, and I went to Africa for 6 months of that. I went to Kenya, and I had a lovely time there, and I shared with a lot of missionaries, and that gave me a renewed taste for Africa. When, in 1992, I was asked, would I be interested in going to Africa, in going to Zambia? And I said yes, without a doubt. I hadn't any hesitation in saying yes.
It's such a big continent, and each area is its own country, really.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, yes. But I loved Zambia. Zambia was a bit different, quite different to Kenya.
How would you describe that difference?
It was more rural. It is a landlocked country. At that time, it was developing. It was a developing country, whereas Kenya would have been more developed in my eyes at that time. Yeah.
You said, Sister Lucy, that you weren't teaching. What were you doing there? What was your job?
Well, my job was parish sister. I was parish sister, and I loved it. I went to Lumco for 3 months to sort of learn the African system of education. In parishes, you would have a lot of people who wouldn't be literate, and there are methods that are used in Lumco which are great. They use pictures and stories, and it was wonderful. It was a great experience. It was a great learning for me. And when I came back, we had those programs. There was Lumco programs, the Way Ahead for Today's Parish, all those programs that were really enabling.
But were the people, were they speaking English, or was there a huge language barrier?
There was a big language barrier. I did do a program first. I had a smattering, we'll say. I was never really fluent, but I could understand more than I did at the beginning, of course. And people were good. I mean, English is the language of business in Zambia. So, yeah, it was possible, let's say. But I don't know what kind of a progress we would have made. But I loved it.
Tell me about the community you were part of when you were working there.
We were always only two or three sisters together. We were international, Indian sisters, African sisters, and ourselves. Yeah.
How long did you spend working as parish sister, and what kind of projects were you involved in?
I was parish sister for about 25 years, I suppose. You know, we'd go out to the outstations and we'd do programs. I would always bring either the priest or the deacon and a few people from the parish with me. So I was never short of people to translate. I will interpret, sister. You know, if I had to say something in English, somebody would interpret for me. So I never had a big problem, really. We used to do the program, the Eucharistic service, and all of that when we went out. And then we'd meet the people afterwards, and we'd have a learning session, and we'd have food, and they were great.
How did you find the climate?
I loved it. I loved the heat and the dryness, and it suited me. It suited me, yeah.
How did you put on sun cream every day?
Well, I should have done, I suppose, yeah. I have the marks to show that I didn't.
But you loved it.
I loved it, yes, yes.
How did it compare to working in Ireland and being at home?
Having worked in Ireland, you know, was a great foundation for me. I think I wouldn't have been maybe as placid as I was. You know, I would have been more enthusiastic and wanting to get things done more quickly and so on. Having been a teacher, I think you learn to listen and to wait and to know that everyone isn't the same and so on. So I think it was a great experience.
And what would you be particularly proud of achievement-wise in your 30 years in Zambia?
I suppose towards the end, as time went on, we had more and more local clergy who were able to do the work, you know, more than able to do the work that I was doing. And then I realized that there were a lot of people who needed help. All the time we were helping people as much as we could. But towards the end, say for the last 20 years that I was there, I was very aware that people need to get started. There were no jobs. People needed to get started. They had no housing. They were poor. So what we started doing was we started building a village. I looked at the situation that was in Africa, how the people would gather in a village situation and work together. So we built a village as an experiment. We called it a model village. And it was a village with 8 families. We had a pump for clean water in the center. We had 8 homes, and every person got 2 acres of land.
How did you fund it?
Oh, Ireland was wonderful. I got people in Ireland who were able to help me. To begin with, there was a group called Agricultural Credit Corporation, ACC. I think they're not there anymore, but they funded totally the first village.
So you were fundraising in Ireland to fund this model village?
Well, yes, I really didn't have very much work to do. Somebody recommended this group. I wrote to them and they said yes.
Fantastic. And you worked with the locals, I presume, to try
all the time. All the time I worked with local people. I always had groups, you know, so these people who would get the homes, we were in a committee, there was a chairperson, and they did all the work, basically. And we bought the materials. They did the building, and we paid just one builder. And the people made their bricks, they brought their sand, they brought their stones, they helped the builder, they learned in the process.
Why do you think they needed help from outsiders like yourself?
Well, they could never manage on their own. These people could never, ever manage on their own. We opened the first village in 2006. And I look at them now and I see how they have developed.
Why do you say they could never manage on their own?
Because they had no money to buy any materials. And that's what they needed. Money to buy the materials. And we bought the materials for them and they got on with it.
So this village has developed into what?
This village has developed into 2 villages, into 3 villages. And it's now a cooperative and they're all working together. The women of the group, we have a sewing group, sort of a tailoring group, and they make stuff and they sell them and they're doing very well.
You have sold some of those crafts here in Castle Island, I believe.
I have indeed, yes. I brought some back with me and a few of my friends that were coming over brought some as well. And we had a sale up here at the church and we did very well. And we sent the money back to them and it was great. It was great.
Is there any song you really like that you associate with what we're talking about here, Sister Mary?
I love the song or hymn, Standing on the Shoulders of the Ones Who Went Before Us.
Let's listen to Joyce Johnson Roos.
I am standing on the shoulders of the ones who came before me. I am stronger for their courage. I am wiser for their words. I am lifted by their longing for a fair and brighter future. I am grateful for their vision, for their toiling on this earth. We are standing on the shoulders of the ones who came before us. They are saints and they are humans. They are angels, they are friends. We can see beyond the struggles and the troubles and the challenge. When we know that by our efforts, things will be better in the end. I imagine ones who came before me.
I'm chatting to Sister Mary Lucy. Coming back to Ireland, how long are you back and how did you decide to come home?
I'm finally back since October. I was allocated to come to Castle Island and here I am since November.
So this is your first time living in Castle Island?
It's my first time living in Castle Island, yes.
But you've been in Dingle and you've been in Mill Street.
I would know Kerry pretty well because when I was in Dingle we did a lot of work. I remember doing work way back with Full Life for Youth. I must have been on a committee or something in my youth and loved it all, loved it all.
So Sister Lucy, do you miss Zambia?
Very much, yes. I miss it very much. But I know that from now on I would only be a burden to people and that I need to let them get on with it now. I never really wanted to stay and keep my hand in on things. I always wanted to live and let live, you know.
And when you look at Africa or you look at Zambia, how do you explain the poverty and the reason that they have been held back so much?
I suppose basically it's education. And people need to learn that white-collar jobs are not the answer for a developing country. I'll think back on my own youth and the people who went to the technical colleges here in Ireland and how well they developed, and they are the ones that have built up this country. And I have been saying that for 30 years in Africa, and I don't know how much it's impinging on people, but it is, I think. Yes, I think it is. I think there are a few colleges now that are training plumbers and carpenters and electricians and people who can develop a country.
So you really believe in the apprenticeship systems?
Absolutely, I would. I would. I would say there's no other way to develop. And I suppose the community colleges and the community schools are doing a lot more than other schools were able to do at the time because they have equipment and they have, you know, facilities to train people with their hands. I think people who can work with their hands are the builders of a nation.
And do you ever look at the history of it and the exploitation and colonisation of these countries?
Yes, I suppose all that plays into where people are at the moment. I suppose Zambia didn't ever become a colony as such. It was what they called a protectorate.
What did that mean?
Well, I don't think it would have been very different to a colony, but people didn't think of themselves as colonised. You know, they didn't seem to, even though in a sense I don't think it was very different.
And what would be their big natural resources? And, you know, the thing that you could have made wealth out of?
In Zambia, copper was the thing. Copper, they had a big booming copper industry, but a lot of it is going out of the country. And the manufacturing aspect of things isn't happening within the country. But it's growing, you know, people are developing. I mean, Lusaka city is like any other city in the world nowadays. You know, when I went there first, it wasn't. And it has developed, the roads have developed, industries have come up, small industries, and people are, you know, getting jobs and developing.
Good to see. I'm chatting to Sister Mary Lucy. What do you think of Ireland today?
I'm getting to know it again, and I'm not sure that I know exactly how to describe it at the moment. I suppose materialism really is very big, but people are good. I find people very good and very supportive and very respectful, but you need to get to know them, and people don't have time like they did have when I was young.
And have you theories on the church and the situation of the church here in Ireland?
Well, it's going to be very different, I think. I see a big, big role for the laity, for their leadership, and they are able. It's just to be able to harness that, I think.
Sisters, the number of sisters, you know, they're decreasing the whole time. We're here in the convent in Castle Island, and it's a very elderly, small community. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, we didn't foresee it, of course. As young sisters, we thought it would always be like that. And that when we'd be silver jubilarians, we'd be semi-retired, just teaching and coming in the evening and having a leisurely time. But it didn't turn out to be like that. And I suppose we have done our work, I reckon. You know, we set up schools, we set up hospitals, you know, all over the country and all over the world. And possibly we have done our work.
Do you feel happy about that?
I do. I'm very happy. I'm not in a position to do anything about these things nowadays, but I am. I think faith is there, basically. There's a faith in people, and young people are very good people. They mightn't be coming to church every Sunday, but their faith is deep, I think. There are opportunities, I think, that maybe we miss sometimes.
For example, what are you thinking of there, Sister Mary?
I'm thinking of, like, funerals. They are very, very good times for evangelization, I think. They're at a very low ebb in their lives, and people can relate to a good sense of faith. It's just to be able to listen to it and hear it and appreciate what other people are thinking and what they're feeling and so on.
Sister Mary Lucy, your jubilee was 2015, so you're a good age now. Any regrets?
I don't think so. I'm a very positive person, as you probably hear. I'm very positive. I suppose, in a sense, my one regret maybe would be that I didn't go to Africa maybe a little sooner than I went. But I'm glad I went, and I'm happy now. I'm happy to be at home and maybe reconnect. I've lost contact with a lot of my family, and that is a regret for me, I suppose. I was not a great communicator while I was away. I have lost contact with a lot of my own nieces and nephews and my own relatives and friends, but we're reconnecting.
Did you not come back every year or every few years, Sister Mary?
I came back in the beginning every 3 years, and I came back every 2 years. Then I was ill for a while, and I was back for a number of months, and then I went back, and I came more or less every year after that. Yeah.
So now is your chance to reconnect.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We're doing it. We're doing it gradually. But there's a lot of sadness, because a lot of the people that I knew are old now and not able and are sick, and there are more funerals in my life now than there ever were. Yeah. But that's how things are, yeah.
Are you glad to be back?
Yes, yes, I'm glad to be back. I would have liked to spend a little more time, but I know that time has come when it's time to call a halt and to say, this is it. I've done my best. I'm happy with what happened, and I've no regrets, really.
Sister Mary Lucy, welcome back to Ireland, to Castle Island, and thank you for all the work you've done all down through the years. God bless the work.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
After the break, the season of creation.